Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Jess Perkins, and as always, I'm here with Matt Stewart and Dave Warnocky.
Hey, Hello, Jess.
So good to be here.
Off the mic, we said we'll just get straight into the episode this week. No mucking around. Hang on a second.
But I did it perfectly.
You absolutely nailed it. While we're here, Jess, would you like to explain to a new listener what this podcast is all about?
Well, seeing as I'm on a roll, yes. Yeah. So what we do each week is one of us goes away, researches a topic, brings it back to the other two and tells them that tale. The other two politely listen, sometimes interrupt with questions, queries, or comments.
Yeah, sometimes some tedious asides happen. Yeah.
Sometimes it reminds us of a thing we saw one time.
Some personal life stories you don't need to know.
And you don't care about, but we tell them anyway. And we always get onto the topic with a question. And Dave, this week it is your turn to do the report. Have you got a question
for us? I do have a question for both of you. And here it is, the first post-block topic. So hopefully this doesn't
disappoint.
Drag.
I'm bored already.
We're hungover from block, but hey, we're rocking into this topic.
But it's festive season. We're leading up to Christmas, exactly. Time of year. So there's a whole new reason to be happy and joyful.
It's magical.
And checking your list and checking it again. Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, now we're feeling better. What is the answer to this question? What is made up of the so-called five families?
Ooh, water, earth, wind. Fire.
Huts.
Go.
Butt
man.
Did we get it?
Yeah, absolutely. RT with the power of heart / butt.
The five, what was it?
It's the five families. Is that a mafia thing?
It is the New York City mafia.
Ooh, that's
five families.
Exciting.
Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Heart.
Sopranos. I mean, they're south New York, obviously in New Jersey.
Yeah, we've got the Altos. The Choir Boys.
That's funny.
That's good.
Do you get
stuff.
It? Sopranos.
I didn't get it, but
Altos.
Now I do.
That's good stuff, Dave.
My topic is specifically on a member of the New York City Mafia, but we will get to him. I'm going to give you a bit of a background.
Okay. Are you going to get us killed?
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm hopefully talking about people that are long dead.
Okay. Hopefully.
I think I feel comfortable as someone who is one quarter Swiss Italian. It'll be nice to learn about my people a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really bumps up the quarter when he needs to.
Yeah, when he really
when
picks
my
and
life yeah. is under threat.
Honestly, our lives. I didn't correct you today because I also need you to be protected by you.
I offer you my protection.
You get like you wake up, a sack gets taken off your head, and you're like tied to a chair, and you're in the Italian mafia, and you just go, Allora. And they're like, ah, he's one of us.
Va bene, va bene.
Va bene. A ciao.
I picture, I don't know if this says anything about me, but I pictured a ball sack taken off his head. A sack taken off his head. I'm picturing.
It's you. It's you I'm talking about.
I've teabagged Dave.
So the ball sack is removed. And I'm sitting
and you're sitting there going, va bene, va bene.
Now you can see. Yeah. Okay.
Everything's looking up.
Five families.
Classy start.
The American Mafia, or the Italian-American Mafia, as it's also known, dates back to the end of the 19th century.
Wow.
The five family crime organizations of New York City, however, were formed in 1931.
Oh, good year.
Did anything happen in 1931?
1931, fantastic stuff happened in 1931.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff was happening.
Probably Essendon won a premiership or something.
Yeah, the Great Depression was really kicking off,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Great times all around.
It's a good time to be a prime minister. Tell you that for sure. I think so. I could be wrong.
Jess's.
It was in the Depression.
Grandpappy.
My grandpappy.
Your grandpappy was the prime minister?
In 31. Bloody hell.
I think so. Anyway, continue.
So before 1931, a guy called Salvatore Maranzano instigated the 1930 Castella Morese War in order to seize control of the entire American mafia. Really went.
Wow.
Had a big play. He went up against a man described by Britannica as New York's crime overlord, Joe Giuseppe Masseria, which is where the name of the war comes from. There was a series of killings that finally stopped when Joe Masseria himself was killed by his own men.
Oh.
More on that later.
Ooh.
So wait, is he the one who started the war?
Or? No, his opponent, Salvatore Maranzano.
Oh, wow.
So
was successful in the end.
Yeah, he had a bit of a coup. Jess, fact check on the 1931?
I think so.
Fantastic.
That's the kind of fact checking I like to hear.
So when you're on your phone just then, you were just looking at Instagram rather than fact checking?
No, I looked it up and then I got distracted, and so, but I'm with you.
What's his name again? James Stratton?
James Scullin.
James Scullin. Fuck, that was close though.
Yeah, not bad. James.
Dave, please do go on.
So I'm trying to paint a picture here. Salvatore Maranzano won the war. He's the one that started it. He won it. And he formed the five families, declaring himself to be the capo de tutti capi, or boss of all bosses.
Mm-hmm.
So the mafia is made up of...
So, because I is the plural of O in Italian. So capo de capi.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Va bene.
And E is the plural of A. Just letting you know.
Now, the mafia is made up of what are called made men. They're basically the members.
Okay.
To become made, an associate first must be Italian or of Italian descent and be sponsored by another made man. So, Jess and you and I, we can't be made men.
No.
But Matt.
We're not of Italian
descent.
You're
in with a chance.
Yeah. Right.
Fantastic. Go for bene, for bene.
For bene.
Molto bene.
Now, an inductee is required to take the oath of omerta. The Mafia Code of Silence and Code of Honour.
Wow.
Basically, you never snitch.
Because snitches get a smack on the hand.
Yeah.
First warning, stop it.
Hey, stop. Stop it.
That's why they call me Matty Tightlips. I ain't saying nothing.
Exactly. See, honestly, you could be made Matt.
Matt, where were you yesterday?
Your lips are so tight. It forms a trumpet-like seal.
I want to tell you.
We were supposed to meet for coffee. You never turned up. I'm worried about you, man.
So after seizing power, Maranzano ordered the families to undergo a structural reorganization, and the hierarchy became soldier, then capo or captain, then consigliere, then underboss, and then top boss.
Wow.
And then he'd be all above all of them.
I'm already lost at that order.
So it's soldier, captain, consigliere, underboss, boss.
Okay.
So it's sort of five levels.
Yeah, right.
The agreement was that each of the five families would respect the interests and territories of others, and disputes would be arbitrated.
Okay.
In 1931, the crime families were Maranzano, who's the absolute top dog. He's got his own family, then he's the overarching guy. Then Profaci, Mangano, Luciano, and the Gagliano families. These families still exist, but are now known different names. They got renamed after other powerful people. Now we've got Bonanno, Colombo, Gambino, Genovese, and the Lucchese families.
Whoa.
Some fantastic names.
Bonanno was in there?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And I'm going to stop egging Mark's car.
I would too. But after the war and power struggle, Salvatore Maranzano named himself the capo di tutti capi, or boss of all bosses, meaning that each of the other four families' bosses would answer to him. He's the top dog. And his grip on total power lasted a whopping 4 months.
Ooh, right. So I said, watching Sopranos, I was thinking, what a stressful life.
Yeah.
It does seem very stressful.
Yeah, it's not for me.
People are knocking each other off.
You'd just be doing everything sort of on edge, you know? Just trying to go get dinner with the fam for Nonna's birthday, and you're looking over your shoulder the whole time.
Yeah, people are scheming against each other constantly. Stressful.
A lot of power plays and, yeah, very, or, you know, even, you know, they think you've done something wrong. We think they've snitched.
Yeah.
And you might get a slap on the wrist, and you I wasn't even looking. Ow!
That hurt. Don't! Stuff like that.
Yeah. No good.
Scary stuff.
So Marizano is in charge for 4 months. Apparently the other crime bosses didn't like that they supposedly now had their own boss.
Yeah, that makes some sense.
Yeah, I understand that.
Also, Maranzano was seen by his younger and ambitious colleagues as a man stuck in his ways. They thought of him as a real, quote, mustache Pete.
Oh, yeah. Telling me.
Oh, bloody mustache Pete over here. What does that mean?
Mustache Pete was a member of the Sicilian Mafia who came to the United States as an adult in the early 20th century.
Ah.
Named so because back then they often had large mustaches.
Okay, well, that's a pretty clever nickname.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's funny because they often had mustaches. So the thing that makes him stand out is the mustache?
Yeah.
Well, the younger members were often called Young Turks, so it was sort of split into these generations. One of these ambitious younger members was Charles Lucky Luciano.
Oh, I've heard of him.
He's a very famous mobster.
That's probably why I've heard of him.
Lucky Luciano. I like that.
He was one of the five bosses. Remember, one of the families is called the Lucianos?
Yeah.
And by many accounts was a bit of a bad ass. One of these accounts is immortalised by Britannica, and I'll read it to you now. Quote, in October 1929, he became the rare gangster to survive a one-way ride. He was abducted by four men in a car, beaten, stabbed repeatedly with an ice pick, had his throat slit from ear to ear, and was left for dead on Staten Island Beach, but survived.
What?
Whoa.
He never named his abductors.
Wow.
End quote.
Nah, that's very good. His name, Lucky? I thought it was just because it sounded like Luciano.
Yeah.
Lucky just, Luciano.
It's just a bit of alliteration.
He was called Lucky Luciano because apparently, for a long time, the cops couldn't get him.
Right.
They get other people around him, but they couldn't. Charges just wouldn't stick to him, and they were like,
"The fact that his throat was cut from ear to ear and survived—that's
fucked. That's
and
crazy."
Stabbed with an ice pick as well, and they just left him out there to bleed to death, and he survived. And after
was
that,
it the kind of thing where he was stabbed with the ice pick, and then they all clear out, and he goes, and he opens his chest, and his Bible has saved him.
Yeah,
you know, something like that.
Yeah, I love when that happens.
Or is he wearing an ice pick? Proof vest.
Yeah.
You look closer and he's wearing a necklace of a Bible around his throat.
Yeah. And that's
cut the cover.
Yeah.
Damn it.
He was also wearing a Bible around his neck. They've just slashed his Bible.
Which is disrespectful.
Yeah. That's bad luck.
He was also the man who lured Joe Masseria to a restaurant to have him killed by his own men. That was the killing that ended the war I mentioned at the start. So he was the one responsible for that. So at first him and Maranzano, he was working with Maranzano. But then Maranzano was basically like, no, I'm the boss now. And he did not like that. Because really the war was only just beginning because Lucky Luciano wasn't happy with the boss of all bosses. So by September 1931, Maranzano, the big boss, realised Lucky Luciano was a threat and hired Vincent Mad Dog Cole, an Irish gangster, to kill him.
Isn't that, it's just an interesting world where you're like, if you look like you're going for too much, you're a threat. If you're not going for enough, you look weak.
Yeah.
So there's like this tiny middle ground that you've got to stay in the whole time
find the balance.
To survive.
When do you get a break?
Ugh, tell you.
I know it's work and obviously you're career motivated and that's good for you. But I mean, when do you get to just put your feet up?
Yeah.
Read a book. Get a massage.
Are there rules about this, Dave?
Yeah, what are the rules? Like, do they get annual leave?
Yeah, and you get one massage a month.
Oh, that's not bad, actually.
A kill-free massage.
Yeah. Hey, hey, nothing weird. You can relax here.
Yeah. That's where relaxation massages, the term, came from.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the first one's where you would be guaranteed not to die.
Yeah.
And that was relaxing, just that thought. Oh, I'm not going to die for the next 50 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. There's not even a masseuse. You're just in a room going, oh,
have
God.
A lie down.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Oh, my shoulders feel so much looser. Yeah.
So Mad Dog, Irish gangster, has been sent to kill him. However, Tommy Lucchese alerted Luciano that he was marked for death. So on September 10, Marizano, the boss of all bosses, ordered Luciano and Genovese to come into his office in Manhattan, two of the other crime bosses. Fearing for his own life and convinced that Marizano planned to use this time to murder him, lucky Luciano decided to act first. The hunter had become the hunted.
Ooh. If it bleeds, kill it. Huh? Something like that?
Predator?
Predator, is that relevant? I haven't seen it. Just know it was quoted to the Brisbane Lions before they beat Essendon.
If it bleeds, kill it.
If you bleed, you can kill it.
Yeah.
I think it was a real first step, big step for man moment there. I missed out a key word.
Is there also do they also say the line, "You're one ugly motherfucker"?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Another Predator line. That's Arnie talking to the Predator.
That's got a little bit of a voice. You might hear that in Sopranos, right?
Yeah.
You are one ugly motherfucker. I can see that being said there. Sorry if that accent was a bit too full on, but like I say, one quarter Swiss Italian.
Yeah, you're allowed.
Take so, that.
I mean, I don't know if I have any New York or New Jersey Italian relatives, but I assume I do.
Yeah.
And I did a pretty thick, that was a pretty thick accent there, wasn't it?
That was a bit much, actually. I didn't get what
you're
saying.
You're one ugly motherfucker.
I'm not,
sorry if that's too
I'm
American.
So sorry. I'm not actually getting anything you're saying.
Too strong.
Yeah, it's too strong, the accent.
Let the record show that he did use his hands.
He did.
Look, we speak with our hands. I'm sorry.
No, please don't apologize. I was just, I just cannot understand what you're saying. I'm so sorry. So sorry. Just a bit of a...
Mikiamo Matthew.
Oh, your name is Matthew.
See.
Yes.
You've gone from the person who couldn't understand to the translator.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
That was what's funny. I can't understand you when you're speaking English. You speak Italian. I'm like, yes. Si, si, si.
Sta cosa così.
Va bene.
So, Luciano's
David,
been called...
Andiamo.
Thank you so much. Is that shut the hell up?
No. I would never say that to you in Italian.
So Luciano's been called into the big boss's office. He's like, this guy's going to whack me. Instead of going to the office himself, Luciano sent four Jewish gangsters who would not be recognized by Maranzano's men.
So that's probably why he chose the Irish guy as well, right? Like he,
yeah, because you
outside of their own kind of community.
Yeah, be like, hang on, why is he sending his hitman? Oh, hang on,
yeah. Why is that my enemy?
Oh, hey,
hitman
Greg,
here?
The hitman Hart, how's it going?
Good to see you. Oh no.
So he sent these four Jewish gangsters disguised as government agents. Two of the gangsters disarmed Maranzano's bodyguards. The other two stabbed the boss multiple times before shooting him dead.
Whoa!
So, like I say, the hunter became the hunted. This is the boss of all bosses. And instead of declaring himself to be capo de tutti I capi, as many expected, lucky Luciano decided to completely abolish the role, believing it created tension and trouble between the families and would make him a target for future ambitious young challengers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's like,
yeah.
I took him out. I don't want anyone to take me out.
Yeah, he's protecting his own butt there.
So he's sort of doing like a triumvirate plus two.
Plus two. So instead he set up what's called the commission.
What's the word you just said?
Triumvirate plus...
Triumvirate.
What's that?
Isn't that like the Romans when they had three in charge or something?
Oh, I'm not having a go. I just did not know that
I
word.
I thought you were still doing that bit where no, like, sorry, I'm not getting any of this.
No, I just I didn't know that word.
Well, look.
And you both looked like yes. And
I'm losing confidence in it by the second.
Sorry.
I think, there's two triumvirates.
Right.
Sorry, but this is the commission.
Yeah.
The commission was a ruling committee to oversee all mafia activities in the United States and served to mediate conflicts between families.
That's interesting that they've gone from going, we don't want to have an overarching thing here, it creates trouble. We're now going to overarch all of America.
Yeah. That'll be easier.
Yeah.
I think that'll be smoother.
Well, the commish.
It consisted of the bosses of the five families that I've already talked about, so the New York City-based ones, as well as the bosses of the Buffalo crime family and the Chicago outfit, who at the time...
Deep was, Dish.
Was in charge was a man named Al Capone.
Oh, yeah. Al Deep him? Dish Capone. Al Windy Capone.
Well, if you have enough Deep Dish, you're going to be windy.
So, I mean, yeah, that's interesting. So they're going, we're sort of usurping his power. We're going to, out from miles away, we're going to be his boss now.
No. It's basically, they're saying they're all on a level playing field.
Right.
And the idea is that you respect each other's territories. Like, whatever you do in Chicago, that's your business.
Yeah.
And I won't interfere with your shit. You won't interfere with my shit. And then the commission agreed to hold meetings every 5 years when they needed to discuss family problems. So say they've got a problem with the feds cracking down on them or something. They call a meeting and all the heads go to an agreed location and
what about the bodies? Yeah, so they leave the bodies behind. That's what you're saying, don't
Matt, if you're going to regret things you say, you have to do it audibly.
Yeah, that's right. We need to hear the regret, my friend.
I think they probably heard it. It is fun to see it as well, though, isn't it? Just you didn't even get through the word bodies and you're already turning away like, fuck. I hate myself.
So that's a little background on the five families and the commission.
Okay.
Is there any connection between the five families and a five cheese pizza?
Name the five cheeses.
Oh, what do we got?
Well, I've got the Bonadonna's. Got the Gio Cheesies.
We're going to get killed.
Mascarpone's. Is that one?
Yeah, that's one. That's one.
Well, you remember the last guy. I forget the last one. I don't know what's going on. I'm on very little sleep.
You're very tired, and I'm having fun with that.
Yeah. She's messing with you, man.
I'm bringing out the best in him, I think.
I agree. So we've got the five families of the commission, which is really
the Parmigiano.
Seven families, including the Parmigianis. Great to have him on board. But we now come to the main character of this week's episode, Vincent Gigante.
Oh, yeah, of the Gouda clan.
Oh, that's the Gouda stuff. Born in New York City in 1928, throughout his life he would be known as The Chin, or simply Chin.
Oh, I love that.
The Chin.
The Chin, or Chin.
Were they picking on him? Did he have a very prominent chin?
No, according to Time magazine, Gigante got the nickname Chin from his mother, who would call him Chinzino.
Okay.
That was her little nickname for him, and then people called him Chin.
What's Chinzino mean, I wonder?
I think that was from a version of Vincent. In her native dialect,
yeah,
I believe,
gotcha,
or something
gotcha.
Like that.
Yep.
And then they, Chin. And then he just became Chin, or The Chin. He was one of
Is
five.
Is The Chin one of the heads? He's a be on one of the heads.
Well, we've got to find out how far this Chin goes.
Okay.
Chin was one of five sons of Salvatore and Yolanda Gigante, both first-generation immigrants from the Italian city of Naples.
Napoli.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
So when Dave says it with his German accent, it sounds so rough.
Yeah.
Naples.
When you say it with that beautiful Italian accent, it just makes me think of home.
What was the Swiss Alps?
Up on the northern border.
So Salvatore, the father, was a watchmaker and Yolanda was a seamstress. Three of his brothers, Mario, Pasquale and Ralph, also became involved in a life of organized crime.
Jeez, Ralph got sure. Mario Pasquale, yes, go on.
Ralph.
I love the name Ralph.
Ralph. As in a euphemism for spewing your guts up.
So they all became part of the organized crime. However, their brother Louis became a Catholic priest.
Oh, good boy, Louis.
It's always one way or the other, isn't it? Gigante dropped out of school and became a professional light heavyweight boxer, which is awesome because his nickname is The Chin.
Oh,
and it has nothing to do with being a boxer.
That's great.
I just realized that. He won 21 of the 25 matches he fought.
Whoa!
Between 1944 and 1947.
It's pretty good.
I bet it was this kind of boxing too, you know, where they're, put them up, put them up, put them up.
Yeah.
I love that kind of boxing.
Well, the New York Times refers to it as blub boxing. And blub boxers in those days fought between four and six round contests in neighborhood arenas, usually getting a percentage of the tickets they sold themselves. But at least one of his fights was fought at Madison Square Garden. Named after?
James Madison, one of the United States presidents, maybe an early one.
Very, in the first five.
And so was Madison Avenue. Don't call me baby.
The band. Great band. So famous that they named a street after them. Can you believe that?
That's the ultimate, you know, that's the goal for any musician, I think. Having a street named after you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Jess ACDC street. Lane in Melbourne.
Yeah. True. Imagine Jess Street. Jess Lane.
I think there's an Amphlett Lane. There's a campaign to have a Davy Lane.
Oh, that's good.
Which is pretty good.
That's good.
His name's Davy Lane.
Yeah.
I did not get that.
From You and My.
Davy Lane.
Guitarist and his other band. Maybe the pictures or the photographs or something. Oh, no.
I don't know.
I don't know.
When he was a teenager, The Chin became the protege of Vito Genovese, a childhood friend of Lucky Luciano and the guy who would they'd later rename the Genovese crime family after.
Oh.
The name it is still known as to this day. So he's going to be a big deal.
Right. The Jenna Cheesy family. Gotcha. Yep.
Future crime boss Mr. Genovese endeared himself to the Gigante family when Vincent, the Chin, was a boy, when he gave him a loan to pay for surgery that his mother needed. So Genovese paid for the surgery, but in exchange, he now owes him for life. Between 17 and 25, Gigante was busy ingratiating himself with the family. He was arrested 7 times on an array of charges, receiving stolen goods, possession of an unlicensed handgun, auto theft, arson, and bookmaking. Most of these were dismissed or resolved by fines, and only one arrest resulted in a jail sentence, which was just 60 days for a gambling conviction.
Hmm.
And when arrested in his early 20s, the Chin listed his occupation as a tailor.
Love that. Yeah, I'll tailor your face to my fist. He used to say real badass stuff like that.
Yeah, that's very cool.
You're going to stitch your fist to my face?
Yeah.
And then I'll bring your pants in. I'll make them 3 sizes too small.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll hurt.
You'll look like an idiot.
Yeah, not enough room around your crotch.
Yeah, that's right. To be honest, you've always got too much room around your crotch. All right. Here
Here
you got a small dick.
Davy Lane's band was The Pictures.
Okay, great.
Again from the New York Times, former New York City detectives who are assigned to organized crime intelligence units said that Mr. Gigante earned his mafia spurs as an enforcer in the 1950s, not surprising for a pretty tough former pro boxer, but now he was a full-time gangster.
Wow. What a proud moment when you go full-time.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
throw away that old tailoring job.
Yeah, you can finally support yourself as a gangster. That's exciting.
Tell your boss, piss off. I'm going to be a gangster now.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't cross me.
What a gangster move that is.
Full gangster.
I guess, you know, technically speaking.
He also had a very busy personal life. He resided with his family consisting of his wife, Olympia, and 5 children in New Jersey.
Olympia is a sick name.
Great name.
Well.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Great. No, I'm excited you're on board because he also maintained his second family at a townhouse in Manhattan with 3 children to his longtime mistress and common-law wife, also named Olympia.
Oh, whoa. You know what?
2 Olympias.
That is actually quite convenient.
Yes.
You can't say the wrong name.
Exactly.
Ever. In the throes of passion.
Yeah, I love you, Olympia.
And if one of them makes you get a tattoo of their name, easy, no problem. No, not having to explain that to the other one. I'd name the kids the same thing, too.
Oh, yeah, that's my clever. Goodness. Yeah.
So he had 8 kids.
Yeah. And
some people just love home life so much.
They were on it twice.
You know when you're a gangster and you've got so much time, you decide to have a second thing?
I mean, there's
home
already
life's
one
so
of
nice.
The...
You got it twice.
In New York, New York. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And he's already part of the 5 families. Now he's got a second family. It's very confusing.
Oh, my God. Many families. Too many people in this, to be honest. So both named Olympia, though. He's got a type, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Bloody Olympias. Loves them.
Both families in the same city?
No, one's in New Jersey and one was in Manhattan. So he had a bit of a barrier.
He had the pike.
How do you explain that? How do you explain that?
Yeah, I'm away every second day on business.
Yeah.
I feel like that they knew about each other.
Okay.
I don't think it was fully secret.
No, you didn't say secret second family.
Yeah, he didn't.
Sort of like the Simon Says game. If you don't say secret,
yeah, that's right.
Then you don't have to do what he says.
It's just legit a second family.
Yeah. I just got a couple of families. They're my common law wife, and this is my law wife.
Both called Olympia.
Yeah.
Super easy.
Have you caught up yet? I'm not going to go over it again.
God, it's so boring because it's just so normal to me.
I've got two wives named Olympia in different cities.
Whatever.
Any genuinely interesting questions?
Yeah, God. Why don't you ask my favorite color or something?
Oh, my God. Come on.
Might surprise you. Oh. It's green.
Oh. I'm a full-time gangster. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
I've gone full-time.
Hey, I'm making it on my own.
How many full-time gangsters
you
know?
I've got like three guns. You're not that interested in it if the guns know about each other.
Yeah, that's right.
They're also named Olympia.
They're all named Olympia. I named my daughter's Olympia and my son's Olympio. Okay? It's easier that way.
And my dog's Olympia and my cat's Olympio. It's easier that way.
Well, sadly, in 1936, Lucky Luciano's luck ran out when he was convicted of running a prostitution ring and sentenced to 30 to 50 years in state prison. He attempted to rule his crime family from in prison with the help of Costello and Meyer Lansky, but found it too difficult. Before this, he had been the most powerful mafia don in the country, possibly ever up until that point.
Wow.
He was even named by Time magazine as one of the most influential people of the 20th century.
Wow. Gangster of the year. They do a cover every year.
Yeah, gangster of the year. No, like the most influential people of the entire 20th century.
Wow.
People like Gandhi and US presidents, Muhammad Ali, all these people that are so iconic. And that's how I actually got onto this topic, having a bit of a goog.
Right.
Dave, we like don't need to know what
you're talking about a pill. You're doing X.
Oh, I thought he was wanking.
Oh,
having a bit of a goog.
I'm such a nerd. I read history lists. But
has anyone ever called ecstasy a goog before? Have I made that up?
I think it's going to catch on.
Great. That's all I want.
I like it.
Anyone with a finger on the pulse, it's you, my friend.
The drug underground culture? Yeah, that I'm a part of. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I've been Googling for years.
Yeah, I dropped one before.
Yeah, I Goog every day.
But all good things must come to an end, even being the most powerful don. With Luciano's imprisonment, Genovese became acting boss of the Luciano crime family. But then in 1937, Genovese himself was indicted for a 1934 murder and decided to flee to Italy to avoid prosecution. Lucky Luciano, who's still in prison, he's lost his backup guy. He appointed Frank Costello to be his acting boss.
That's a great name. Mm. Set your watch to that name. Great name.
And Costello became the full-time boss when Lucky Luciano was deported to Italy. Costello's nickname was the Prime Minister of the Underworld.
That's wordy.
Yeah, it's too much.
I like it.
I like it. Don't get me wrong.
And he held on to this role as head of the family until 1957, so he was top dog for over 20 years.
I just had this thought, and I don't know if you've connected these two at all, Dave, but just this topic a few weeks ago, the mystery of the murder in room 1046 or 47.
No, that's right.
There was a don, a mysterious don. This happened in 1935, I think.
Yeah.
So
one
of these dons could have been the don.
Could have been the don.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely a theory that it was mafia related.
Ah, interesting.
Mm. Imagine if it gets solved. Which always happens when we do.
Just waiting for the email.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I thought you might want to see this. We just get tagged in a lot of stuff on Twitter. I'm like, there it is.
Holy shit. Yeah, I love those days.
Yeah, it's a good day.
Do we do it again?
Yeah.
Do we somehow...
Are we magic? It's exciting to think we're magic.
So the Prime Minister of the Underworld, Costello, was in charge. until 1957. But that was the year that Vito Genovese decided to take him on and reclaim the top job that he'd been briefly given 20 years earlier before having to flee to Italy. Genovese had been biding this whole time in the wings waiting to take over. And to make his dream a reality, he turned to his young protege, a certain former boxer named Vincent Chin Gigante.
Oh, the Chin.
Remember when Chin was growing up, he lent him money to save his mother's life? And I don't know if it went like this, but I imagine it was, look, I'll do you a favor, but there may be...
One day,
I may come
be
to
a
you.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, and he's come.
And he's saying that to it like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm gonna come get you. I'm going to get you and I'm going
to... Okay, mister.
All right. Okay. Just want my mummy to be fixed. Oh, yeah. I'm going to fix your mummy. All right.
Then you might have to fix me one day.
Okay.
They may never come, but it may.
This kid's like, this guy's weird.
Yeah. What are you talking
Can
about?
Can I go play with my trucks now?
Yeah. I'm bored.
25 years later, though, that day came. Because on May 2nd, 1957, Frank Costello, the Prime Minister of the Underworld, the leader of the Luciano family, went out for dinner and with his wife and some friends. He took a taxi home, and as it pulled up to his building, Costello made his way to the front door. And as he did so, a black Cadillac slowly pulled up the curb behind it. As Costello entered his building, a shot rang out, and he stumbled and landed on a leather couch in the foyer.
Oh, that is handy.
That is so convenient. What great placement.
He fell. The gunman ran back into the Cadillac and sped away.
Hard to get blood out of leather, I assume, though. Although, I mean, leather is skin.
Just wipe it down.
Wipe it off.
The bullet was clearly meant to kill Costello, but it had, in fact, only grazed his scalp.
Oh, that is lucky.
That's not a good place to graze, though.
Oh, I know.
I wouldn't mind if it grazed your arm. Actually, I mean, obviously, it's still horrendously painful.
But a graze is a great result.
Yeah, a centimetre down and it's in your head.
It's a bit of a Mighty Duck scenario where Gordon Bombay would say about his big chance when he was a kid, he said, quarter of an inch the other side, that's a goal. And then little Charlie, played by Pacey from Dawson's Creek, says... Yeah, but a quarter of an inch the other way, and you miss completely. And Gordon Bombay's like, huh, never thought of it like that. I think there's something in that.
It's a beautiful moment, isn't
it? Don't you reckon?
In cinema.
Yeah.
I think there's something there for everyone.
I think so too.
Shut up, Pacey.
Shut up.
Shut up.
What's that guy's real name?
Joshua Jackson.
Oh, my God.
Is that Joshua Jackson?
That's Joshua Jackson.
I'm calling you on phone a friend.
Yeah.
If we ever have pop culture name question.
Call me.
Who played Van Wilder? I can't think of his name.
Ryan Reynolds.
Thank you.
So he's been shot at. It's just crazy scalp. He's lucky to be alive. Costello was repeatedly questioned about his attacker, but he told them, I didn't even see an attacker.
Yeah. I didn't see nothing.
According to
what he actually said was...
Apparently, he even claimed to have not even heard a gunshot.
Yeah, right. Ain't heard nothing.
I didn't hear nothing. 66 police officers were put on the case.
Whoa.
And soon there was a breakthrough. A doorman of the building identified the 29-year-old Mr. Chin Gigante as the shooter. But Costello testified that he was unable to recognise his assailant, and Mr. Gigante was acquitted in 1958 on the charge of attempted murder. According to reporters in the courtroom, following Gigante's acquittal, he was heard saying to Costello, "Thanks, Frank." The guy he just tried to murder for not saying he did it.
I love, it's like the player's code in the AFL.
Thanks, Frank.
You can be knocked out, but at the tribunal he said, I didn't even feel it. I don't think they do that anymore. Now they're like, he punched me right in the face. I mean, you've got multiple angles on it.
Yeah.
What's the point of denying it?
Yeah.
So Frank Costello, the Prime Minister of the Underworld, survived the hit, but he took a hint and decided to retire as crime boss.
Clever.
Leading the way for Vito, a.k.a. Don Vito Genovese.
You can just retire? You don't have to die in that job?
Yeah, a lot of these people decide I'm a bit old for it and then they retire.
That's great. Yeah, there's... Yeah.
Is there some sort of pension involved?
I think
like Prime Ministers, you know?
They're probably... I mean, I've learned a lot from Sopranos and my own family history, but I think it does seem like if you're out at the right spot, then you'll be looked after. Or if you take a hit from the cops, like you go down for the greater good, then you'll be looked after to some extent. I mean, I don't know how accurate The Sopranos is, but...
When I was reading, it did seem like that, but a lot of the time, it feels like they leave it too late, so they call it and go... They're out of. I'm too old for this. 2 years later, they're dead of cancer or something.
Yeah.
Oh. It's like, oh, you didn't get to enjoy a great retirement or anything.
Yeah.
But there's also a chance of, you know, they've got to trust that you're actually out. If people still suss on you, they might be like, we're going to make sure of this.
Yeah.
Or, and I think if you try and get out at two, and when you're not right up the top, when you're like a foot soldier sort of guy, I think that seems sus as well. You know too much.
Yeah.
Why are you going out? You can't go straight now, sort of thing, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking from a real place of knowledge here.
Well, Don Vito Genovese took over the family, and it was soon named after him, and like I said, it's still called the Genovese crime family. But again, the chin and his new boss's luck didn't last long.
Mm.
A year later, Giganti was convicted along with his crime boss Genovese on federal charges of heroin trafficking.
Oh.
This time he listed his profession as the superintendent of a local building.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Just looking after a building.
Yeah, look after this building with all these families that live there. I'm just like the, you know.
Such a great title. Yeah. The superintendent. I don't know what it does, but man, it sounds important.
Sounds great.
Anything with super in your title.
Yeah, that's great.
Intendant? I don't know what it means, but fuck, it sounds sick.
So good.
I'm a superintendent.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, come at me.
Do you want to be a superintendent of Do Go On?
Yeah.
Okay. It's yours.
I'm happy for that.
You're hired.
Ah, that feels good.
Dave, there can only be one.
Can I be the underboss?
Oh, no. Now Dave's going to come for me.
Yeah. I'll be your underboss.
You can be the underboss.
Soon I'll be the superintendent. If I get my way.
Oh, my God. What have I started?
I'm retiring.
So he's been charged on heroin trafficking. The chin Giganti was sentenced to 7 years in prison, and his boss Genovese got double.
Oh.
Proper sentence, long stretch.
So, hang on, the chin got 7.
And Genovese got about 15.
Oh, I was going to do a maths bit. Oh. I was going to try and figure it out. Okay, 7.
The sentencing judge said he would have imposed a longer sentence for Giganti, but was swayed by a flood of letters from residents of Greenwich Village and Little Italy attesting to his good character and his work on behalf of juveniles. So he was popular in his community.
Oh, cool.
Or at least they were scared of him.
Yeah.
He was paroled after 5 years, and soon afterwards he was promoted from soldier to the rank of capo or captain and was put in charge of overseeing a group of mafia gangsters known as a crew in Greenwich Village. Crime boss Vito Genovese was still in prison but managed to hold on to power until 1969 when he died behind bars. So it didn't pay off for him. In 1969, he was indicted, this is Giganti, in New Jersey on a charge of conspiracy to bribe all 5 members of the old Tappan police force in New Jersey. So the squad has 5 members. He tried to bribe them all.
And how'd he go?
Well, he hoped they'd alert him to surveillance operations by law enforcement agencies, but... they obviously turned him in.
Oh, right. Took the money and then turned him in.
Yeah, I do. The accusation was dropped after Mr. Giganti's lawyers presented reports from psychiatrists that he was mentally unfit to stand trial. His lawyers presented reports from psychiatrists at his trial saying that he suffered from paranoid schizophrenia and that he was declared unfit and the charges were dropped.
Okay.
Right.
This was the first sign of a tactic that the chin would successfully use for decades.
Oh.
Decades. That bodes well for the chin.
In terms of life expectancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to live for a lot longer. By the start of the 80s, Philip Lombardo, a.k.a. Benny Squint, a.k.a. Cockeyed Phil, was in charge of the Genovese crime family.
Love all that. Cockeyed Phil.
He got the nicknames because he wore thick glasses, thick-rimmed glasses.
Benny the Squint?
Benny Squint or Cockeyed Phil.
Love that.
So this is Lombardo. In 1981, Lombardo, he was in charge, but he stepped down as boss due to poor health, naming our main man, Vincent the Chin Giganti, as his successor, while at the same time making Anthony Fat Tony Salerno the new front boss in order to disguise Giganti's transition into the new boss. A front boss is sort of like a public figure head that the law thinks is the boss.
Right.
So the real boss can do stuff secretly. Boss. It's a fake boss.
That's cool.
So Fat Tony, all the cops think that Fat Tony's the main man, but Giganti's really pulling the strings from behind the scenes.
There's been a few Fat Tonys in more recent times. Was he the first Fat Tony? Because isn't there, there's a Simpsons character, Fat Tony, then there was a Melbourne guy, Fat Tony, wasn't there? Tony Mockbell was known as Fat Tony,
I think.
This guy's definitely before at least those two, but I can't tell you if he's the definitive
right.
Fat Tony.
Right.
Because it's an iconic nickname.
Great name. So by having a front boss, this way the FBI would still not know who was really in charge and would continue to go after the wrong people, which they did, sentencing front boss Fat Tony Salerno to 100 years in prison in the 1986 Mafia Commission trial. So they were like, oh, here's the boss, we got him. 100 years for you.
Whoa.
He served 6 and died in prison in 1992.
Oh, shit.
So the former boxer Gigante had become the boss of one of the most powerful mob families in the world, and under his leadership, the crime family became the wealthiest and most powerful crime family in the nation. In the early 90s, the family was thought to be making $100 million per year.
Four.
That's a good little bunce.
Not a bad little bunce.
Am I using that right?
Yes.
The family's fortune flowed largely from a vast network of bookmaking and loan sharking rings and from extortions of construction companies in the New York City area. They also had controls of cartels that rigged bids and inflated prices in the private garbage hauling industries, got kickbacks from shipping and trucking companies on the New Jersey and Florida waterfronts in exchange for labor peace, protection payoffs from merchants at fish markets, and had control of many union jobs. They even pocketed thousands of dollars donated to a neighborhood church.
Oh.
So Gigante had his finger in many pies, and he wanted to insure himself against prosecution. According to the New York Times, as a new godfather, Mr. Gigante quickly imposed extraordinary security measures. Genovese soldiers and associates were forbidden to utter his name or nickname in conversations or telephone calls. When references to him had to be made, capos or soldiers would silently point to their chins or form the letter C with their fingers.
Okay.
So never say the chin out loud.
Bit of sign language on the go. We love it.
And so, yeah, he's like becoming Voldemort.
Yeah.
Don't say it. Don't say it. Apparently, a sign at his headquarters warned, quote, "Don't talk. This place is bugged." I imagine he just tapped the sign. He held his commission meetings inside his mother's apartment.
He comes in. Someone comes in. Got a delivery for you. He's tapping the sign. Yeah. Where should I put these?
Okay.
Should I just put them here?
Put them here or... Are you going to sign for him? Or... Jeez, mister, I'm just trying to do my job.
Why do you keep pointing to your chin? Gun goes off.
Gun rings out. Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, in the late 60s, he avoided conviction by getting his lawyers to claim he was mentally unfit for trial. As another form of protection, because he's quite paranoid, Gigante stepped it up once he became a godfather. He wanted to appear to be mentally unwell, so if he was ever arrested, he would be able to counter the charges by doctors and lawyers, saying there's no way he's fit to stand trial, and also there's no way he committed the crimes you're saying. How could this man be a ruthless gang leader?
Mm.
So he started shuffling around the Greenwich Village neighbourhood in pyjamas, a dressing gown and slippers, mumbling to himself to create a public character of a disturbed but harmless man. He would often be seen by locals talking to parking meters or just pissing in the street.
This is the chin.
This is the chin. So he'd just shuffle around wearing a dressing gown, slippers, wandering around, talking to things. So people would see him and go, oh.
He's a harmless.
He's a harmless man. Just, yeah. You know, we all know that
really
guy.
Really committing to the bit.
Is he older by this stage?
He's older, but not super
not
old.
Not old,
you know,
yeah.
Like 50s.
Yeah, okay.
There's a guy in Sopranos where I'm up to at the moment who's doing this, but I don't think he's pretending. But he was like, he's like one of the bosses going around in his dressing gown.
That's definitely based on this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of things that feel like they've found it. And that guy also has, this is a different guy, but has thick rim glasses.
Like Benny Squint.
Yeah, exactly. He's a real composite kind of character.
So yeah, he just wander around in the dressing gown, creating this character. If a cop or prosecutor was near, he would slobber, waggle his head and talk to himself. A subpoena served in the mid-80s found him in his shower, naked with an umbrella over his head. So he just came up with these, like, characters to make himself look unwell.
Wow.
The New York Times break down an average day for the chin. They write, "Most days in the early evening, Mr. Gigante, a hulking man about 6 feet tall and weighing 200 pounds, would emerge from his mother's walk-up apartment building on Sullivan Street in Greenwich Village, sometimes dressed in a bathrobe and pyjamas, and sometimes wearing a windbreaker and shabby trousers, and always accompanied by one or two bodyguards, he would gingerly cross the street to the Triangle Civic Improvement Association, a dingy storefront club that served as his headquarters. Inside, he would hold whispered conversations with men who agents said were his trusted confidants. This was another thing he did. He only whispered when talking about business, so that it was hard for anyone wearing a wire to record what he was saying.
Right.
He also avoided the phone because it was probably tapped, and never let his house be unoccupied for fear of the FBI planting bugging equipment. So he always had a family member at home.
He's actually a genius.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, the detail he's going to just to to avoid. It's like he's always one step ahead. That's how it feels.
Back to his daily movements. After midnight, according to FBI surveillance reports, he would be driven to a townhouse near Park Avenue on East 77th Street that was owned by Olympia Esposito, who's the second Olympia. FBI agents who in 1986 observed the townhouse from a nearby rooftop post said that soon after arriving, Mr. Gigante would change into more elegant clothes, carry on conversations with associates, and read or watch television before retiring. About 9 or 10 the next morning, he would reappear in his shabby downtown clothes and be driven back to Sullivan Street or a nearby apartment occupied by his relatives. So that was his routine.
It's, you know, like, is it worth it? Because, I mean, all of this is for so he can help, you know, run a business and earn a lot of money.
Mm.
But he's spending so much of his time being, you know, pretending to be someone else.
And he starts living this character.
Yeah, so it's like, when's it stop being worth it? But you also said the cops are watching him do this, so they're aware that now that he's...
Yeah, they're trying to put a case together against
him. So it's not even necessarily working anymore. So he's just spending all this time...
But then they've got to prove it.
Right.
And his dressing gown plan was really put to the test when in 1990, Gigante was indicted on federal charges that he and 14 other dependents had rigged bids to extort payoffs from contracts to install windows with a New York City housing authority. Apparently, installation companies were required to make union payoffs between $1 and $2 for each window they installed. So they were like, yeah, we'll let you install these windows, but you've got to give us a cut, even though they had nothing to do with the installation. Right.
Cut in the middleman.
Yeah, so they make themselves the middleman, and that's illegal, so finally they got him on something. At his arraignment, Gigante rocked up to court wearing pyjamas.
Okay.
And it's got to be said that his appearance and reputation started to pay off. He was tried separately from the others whilst the court attempted to establish if he was mentally fit to stand trial. This part of the trial lasted 7 years.
Whoa.
What?
So whilst the other people are probably found guilty and sent to jail, they still have to prove that he's able to go to stand on trial, and that part takes 7 years. And in the meantime, he gets to live his life.
7 years?
7 years.
Wow.
He would appear at court, be escorted in by bodyguards and family members who basically look like they're holding him up. There's like TV vision of this. And every time he's wearing pajamas or a dressing gown, hired teams of psychiatrists would dutifully report that Gigante suffered from paranoid schizophrenia, dementia and Alzheimer's disease, giving credit to the ruse. They also said he had a low IQ of 70 and he wouldn't be capable of the complex plots that he's been accused of. They're like, no, look at this man. There's no way he's this scary crime boss.
Wow.
The New York Times writes, at sanity hearings in March 1996, this is 6 years in.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Gravano of the Gambino family and Alphonse Diaco, who's the former acting boss of the Lucchese crime family, testified, breaking that code, that Mr. Gigante was lucid at top-level mafia meetings.
Ooh.
And that he had told other gangsters that his eccentric behavior was just a pretense.
Wow. So he's a snitch.
So the family would, like the families come together, you know, that commission. And I imagine they'd be like, I've heard that you're wandering around in a dressing gown. Should we be worried? And he's like, oh, no. I just pretend to do that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, okay.
But then surely part of that would be you don't go tell a court.
Yeah. Yes.
So they've broken that
code.
Oh,
they're fucked.
Really broken it. But Gigante's lawyers were prepared. His defense had been 25 years in the making, and they showed reports and testimonies from psychiatrists and psychologists that stated between 1969 and 1995 he had been confined 28 times in hospital for treatment of hallucinations. They argued he suffered from dementia rooted in organic brain damage. So he'd been going every year for 25 years, spending a little bit of time in hospital. So if the day came, he could say,
check out my receipts.
Yeah, check it out.
Whoa.
I've got a track record. I've been to a lot of hospitals.
And they all say, you know, that I have these conditions.
Exactly.
And I couldn't possibly be capable of it.
No way. So, yeah, it's just...
That's amazing.
Future-proof. His eccentric behaviour led Gigante to be given another nickname, which is the Odd Father.
Oh, that's
fun.
That's
right.
That's New York tabloids covering the trial, because it became more and more famous over the years.
I want to be clear that I think, I'm saying that's amazing. It's obviously a deeply insensitive thing to do through a modern lens, but if I'm thinking about this like a movie, it's pretty genius.
It is clever because it works, but then it is also morally, you know, questionable. But then also we're talking about the
mafia.
Yeah, we're also talking about.
Exactly,
are you
right.
telling me? Well, I think I draw the line here.
Yeah, no.
I draw a moral line. The mafia. Yeah. Now they've gone too far.
Yeah, it's fine for you to kill each other.
Yeah. But don't pretend to be unwell.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or... anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Gigante's family were also an integral part of the ruse, with his younger brother, Louis, the only brother that didn't join the mob and instead became the Catholic priest, repeatedly attesting to his brother's various mental illnesses. The priest accused the relentless investigations of his older brother as persecutions by agents and prosecutors biased against Italian Americans.
Wow.
His brother said, "Vincent is a paranoid schizophrenic. He hallucinates. He's been that way since 1968. And when you've got a priest up there giving that evidence, that does give you a bit of sway.
It's very
as well.
Compelling,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So his brother said he's schizophrenic, but others saw it differently. "He was probably the most clever organized crime figure I have ever seen," said John S. Pritchard, the third, amazing, a former FBI supervisor who led a squad that investigated the Genovese family in the 1980s. So he was impressing people on the other side too.
Wow.
Whilst his trial was going on in 1993, way more serious charges were brought against Gigante. This time he was charged with being the head of the Genovese family and sanctioning the murder of 6 mobsters and conspiring to kill 3 others, including John Gotti, the famous boss of the Gambino crime family. Later played by John Travolta in the film Gotti.
Ah. Thought I'd heard of John Gotti from somewhere.
Apparently, Gigante, so he was a bit of a character in the 90s, and 80s and 90s, Gotti. Apparently, Gigante wanted to have Gotti killed because he had violated mafia protocol by arranging the assassination of the previous Gambino boss, Paul Castellano, and who had been Gigante's partner in many illegal rackets. So he's like, "You knocked off my friend, I want revenge." But also, on a personal level, Gotti was a flashy guy, often reported on in the media, and Gigante didn't like that. He was old school and preferred people to keep their mouths shut. So he was often in the tabloids.
So John Gotti was seen as this kid.
Yeah.
What was his nickname? Hollywood Gotti or something?
Yeah, a bit of a show-off, yeah.
Right.
And he was like, I never talk to the media, so
yeah,
I don't like that. So he went after Gotti, but it didn't quite go to plan. A bombing killed his underboss and badly injured a Gotti lookalike who was mistakenly targeted.
I've just looked up.
Oops.
Oh, that's unlucky.
That's
I know.
Awful.
I guess I suppose that's why you employ a lookalike, but still awful.
Just got a couple of John Gotti nicknames, if you like. The Teflon Don, the Dapper Don, Johnny Boy, and Crazy Horse.
Ooh.
Pretty good.
I think I like...
Teflon Don, nothing sticks. He must have obviously...
Yeah, I like that the most, I think.
Sadly, in the end, it did stick for him. Gigante spent years on bail after posting $1 million and wearing a tracking device. That was one of the things. But he was in and out of court as his lawyer and family argued he was unfit to stand trial. But, you know, he got to carry on with his life for 7 years because of this ruse.
Huh.
In August 1996, however, Judge Eugene H. Nickerson of the
Dave, you gotta warn us when something like that's coming.
As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, oh my, when you skim reading this, you're like, oh yeah, but oh my God, as you say it out loud. Yeah,
can you give us one more time?
Judge Eugene H. Nickerson.
Oh, that is good stuff.
That really hits the spot.
That is good.
When he was pronouncing someone guilty, he'd say, you've been nicked.
Oh, that's good.
He's from the Federal District Court in Brooklyn. He ruled that Mr. Gigante was...
He ruled. That's all you need to say.
He ruled, baby. You skateboarded out of court. He finally ruled that in 1996 that Gigante was mentally competent to stand trial on murder and racketeering charges. The judge found that he'd been using false medical excuses to avoid trial since at least 1991. Eventually, he was convicted of racketeering and conspiracy to commit murder on July 25th, 1997. And now 75 years old, Gigante was sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Did he break character?
At this point, he's looking at a maximum of 27 years, but they gave him 12 years.
Right.
So, which would take him to 87. When he was sentencing Gigante, Judge Jack B. Weinstein said...
Oh, Jack B. Weinstein.
Jack B. Weinstein. He said, he is a shadow of his former self, an old man finally brought to bay in his declining years after decades of vicious criminal tyranny. God bless you, he told the judge, offering a broad wave goodbye when leaving the Brooklyn courtroom. Gigante was jailed in the medical ward at the federal prison in Springfield, the same facility where the man he tried to kill, John Gotti, died in 2002.
That's so right.
They all end up in the same place.
Yeah, right. But did he continue to say that
he was... Yes, well, he continued to run the family from behind bars until 2003.
Wow.
When Gigante finally admitted his long con and pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice, acknowledging that he'd run a con on the legal system between 1990 and 1997 whilst his sanity was examined. So he admitted it finally.
Wow.
He'd been faking it since 1969.
Why did he admit it? Oh, the Summer of Love. Why did he admit it?
Well, his lawyer, Benjamin Braffman, commented on his admission saying, I think you get to a point in life, I think everyone does, where you become too old, too sick, and just too tired to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big sort of lie to keep going. And
yeah. And also, it took years off his sentence. As part of his admission, 3 years were added to his sentence instead of heaps more.
Right.
So it was kind of a gamble, I think, to try and get out of prison alive. But he did avoid admitting that he was the head of the Genovese crime family. He never said...
Because I was the front boss.
Yeah, he was like, what are you talking about?
Fat Tony.
Fat Tony's a guy. But sadly, all good things must finally come to an end, and Vincent the Chin Gigante died in prison in 2005 at the age of 77.
Wow.
He's been described as the last great mafioso of the century, and his death closed the chapter on an era of organised crime. So he was one of the last old school guys.
Wow.
And whilst his plan worked, like you asked before, was it worth it? Well, to quote from Jerry Capici, a mafia expert and author of 6 books on organised crime. Capici, it's a great name.
Hey, Capici.
Amazing name.
To finish my report, he said, the Looney Tunes Act served Gigante well. It kept him out of prison for 30 years. But in the end, he was the victim of his own crazy act. He never had a chance to enjoy the fruits of his plunder, and he told some people that if given the chance, he wouldn't do it that way again.
Right. Wow. Interesting. Yeah, it did have that feel.
Yeah, like it's such a long act, and he had to be so committed. Like, basically, the Daniel Day-Lewis of mafia crime bosses.
Right. Yeah.
And
all that time he was spending in the... He could just be having a shower without an umbrella,
you know?
Which is nice. He would know what the nicer feeling of shower on your head is.
Yes. Oh, my God, nothing more soothing. Oh,
weeing in the toilet in private rather than in the street.
Enjoying
a good private wee.
Though, having said that, wearing slippers and a dressing gown wherever you go, that's living.
That's all right. That's nice.
This
coming from you, you won't even wear trackies on a long-haul flight.
Yeah, exactly, because I don't want it to be Vincent Gigante.
Matt and I are okay with being Vincent Gigante.
I think there's a middle ground here, Dave.
I think it's just comfort.
It doesn't. You don't wear tracksuits on a plane and become a crime boss.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Well, you just got to have some self-respect. Which is very important in the mafia, I believe.
Yeah.
What? Respect.
Yeah, have a little respect.
I just came across that story and I was just like, that is so wild. Such a long, long con. I just had to write about it. Yeah. Had to report on it.
Fantastic work, Dave. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Because I knew the five families, but I didn't know any of that.
I didn't know any of that backstory. And the fact that Lucky Luciano was so famous and powerful that even people that I've heard more about, like Al Capone, that he wasn't the guy. Lucky Luciano apparently modernized the mafia to the point that that time were like, yeah, he's one of the most 100 important people of the last century.
Amazing.
Blew my mind.
Oh, well, great work, Dave. Yeah, that was one you found yourself. I think next week you'll be back, or your next report will be back on the vote.
Yes, I'm going to be voted for. So we haven't. So the people that support us on Patreon get to vote for two out of three topics, which we did a big vote for Block instead for a while, but the votes week to week will be coming back as of, I imagine, this week.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, that's one of the many things you can do if you support us on the show, which I'll tell you about now on everyone's favourite section of the show, where we do thank our great supporters. If you want to get involved in that, you can go to patreon.com/dogoonpod or dogoonpod.com. And there's a bunch of different levels you can get. What are some of the rewards you can get, Bopper?
You can get a newsletter that's infrequent. You can get early access tickets to shows, three bonus episodes per month. One of those is our Brendan Fraser filmography podcast, Phrasing the Bar.
That's right. And one of the other things you can get if you sign up on the Sydney Sheinberg level is you get to give us a fact, a quote, or a question. And this section of the show has a little jingle. I think it goes something like this.
Fact, quote, or question, brag, or suggestion.
Ding. He always remembers the ding. And on this one, you get to give us a fact, a quote, or a question, or brag, or suggestion. And you also get to give yourself a title or a nickname. First up this week, we've got Jamie Lidlow, who's given herself the title of female, all caps, Aussie farmer with endless fruit facts. I think I might have maybe thought last time Jamie was a man. So
okay.
We have talked over the Patreon chat, so I think that's very fun stuff. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't.
Female.
she wasn't offended or hurt.
Okay.
It's all fine.
I'd be hurt if somebody thought I was a bleh, man.
Oh.
I'm sorry. You're just all trash.
So Jamie has, I think I also called her Jammy last time.
Oh, yeah.
So she's helped me out with the pronunciation of her name as well. Thank you so much, Jamie. And Jamie's offered us a fact, which is, this infuriated me when I learned this, but if you go to the shop and pick out five pink lady apples, it is likely that you'll get multiple different varieties of apple in there.
What?
Pink Lady is not a variety of apple, but only a trademark name that everyone will know. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I always get Pink Ladies.
I think a Pink Lady has been like one of my favourite apples.
Me too.
Oh my gosh.
They're all different.
What?
But they all look the same.
I don't get it.
How are they different?
What's going on?
Jamie, that's crazy.
Jamie, more info required.
Oh my God, Jamie, you've blown my mind.
I think I'm also infuriated.
I'm infuriated. I love pink ladies.
Dave looks indifferent.
I don't love apples, but I'm looking up because it's still blowing my mind. Wow.
That's my go-to apple.
Yeah, that's my go-to apple as well. Love a pink lady.
Love a Granny Smith, but for stewing.
You thought you loved a pink lady.
Yeah, I don't know what I feel anymore.
Fuji, if you get the honey whore, fantastic. I remember that when I was a kid, there was an infomercial for Fuji apples. And they cut one open and said, if you're lucky, you'll get one of these with a honey core. And I'm like, what is going on?
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
What's a honey core?
What is this? The future of apples.
Is it honey?
It's just like you could sort of see it was like sort of yellowy brown in the middle, and it was particularly sweet at the core. I didn't understand.
Wow.
Have I made that up?
Maybe.
Maybe Jamie, can help us
Jamie,
understand.
Jamie, help us.
Is there such a thing as a honey core?
Wow.
I reckon it was on just after a Natural Glow.
Natural Glow.
Infomercial. You put on as much as you need. If you want a darker shade, put on more Natural Glow. And Mick Jagger hosted this one.
Not funny.
Not funny. All right, next one. Thank you, Jamie. Next one comes from Roy Phillips, who's also offering a fact. But Roy writes his title, The Great Grower of Green Greek Grapes. Oh, thank you so much, Roy.
Lots of fruit happening today.
That was a similar sort of tongue twister as when Dave said before, I can't remember, but there was three F words in a row, and I'm like, bloody hell, David.
Fuck, is what he said. I think it was beautiful.
Right. That tickled me right in the ear hole. Anyway, Roy's fact is cabbage, Brussels sprouts, kale, broccoli, kohlrabi, and cauliflower are all variations of the same plant.
What?
Is kohlrabi? I've never heard of that. Is that? Did I say that right?
I think that might be, no, I don't know.
It's spelled K-O-H-L-R-A-B-I. So they're all variations of the same plant, Brassica oleracea. If you prioritize large leaves, you get kale. Flower buds, you get cauliflower. Vertical leaf buds, that's Brussels sprouts.
Wow.
That's interesting.
These fruit the and vegetable facts are blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Amazing to get two back-to-back. One fruit, one veg.
Love that.
Hey, we almost got our daily intake sorted. Thanks so much, Roy. Next one comes from Dominic Stevenson.
I hope it's about bananas.
Oh, gosh.
That'd be so good.
Dominic's title is Librarian. Shh. In brackets.
Oh, I laughed too loud at that.
Dominic is offering a quote. Dominic quotes thusly, "Both optimists and pessimists contribute to our society. The optimist invents the airplane and the pessimist the parachute." That's fun. That's from W.H.H. McKellar.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's
need awesome. A bit of both, don't you? You know? Optimism, pessimism. You need them both.
You got to have them both.
You know what I mean? Isn't that beautiful?
The yin, yang, so, got them all.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
And finally this week from the Fact Quote or Question is from Ben Oliver, who's got the title of Subterranean Titanium Alien.
Nice.
That felt so nice to say. And Ben is asking a question. So we got a fact, a quote. No, we got a, yeah, we got a fact, two facts, a quote, and a question this week. The question is, what is your least favorite trend of the last decade? Was it planking, flossing, Harlem Shake, bottle flipping, or any of the others?
Oh.
Or did you love them all? I was a teacher during most of these years, and I disliked them. Strongly disliked them.
Yeah, I can understand why.
Least favorite trends.
I
feel like I've got no problems with any of these.
Yeah, because I'm very much on the periphery.
Yeah.
Like I'm seeing people doing it and I might think, that's dumb. But then I get on with my life. If you're a teacher and the youths are doing it nonstop, I can understand that would be very annoying.
Yeah, I can't think. I'm actually looking at a list of 2010 fads to try and help. One is called the Cinnamon Challenge. Oh, is that when people try to eat cinnamon?
Yeah, but again, like I might see somebody do that on YouTube at the time or like on TikTok now. And if it's something I'm not interested in, I can just scroll past it. I don't really get into I'm too old for trends.
What about fashion trends?
Fashion trends, flares are back.
Are they really? Flares are back.
I've always hated flares. Flares are back, yeah. So awful. There you go, there's my one.
There you go.
Yeah, I feel like I can't get angry about pants.
Just wear whatever fucking pants you want to wear.
No, sorry, I was just trying to.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Trying to dislike.
That's what I'm trying. What
but they really do come back in cycles. I remember as things started to get fashionable when I was a teenager, my mum was like, yeah, that's what I was wearing when I was in my 20s. And I'd be like, whatever, mum, it's cool.
You don't
cool.
get it. You don't get it, Dad. Right? I like Led Zeppelin. You probably never even
know. You don't even know who the Beatles are. But now I'm seeing like young people, they're wearing the butterfly clips again. And I'm like, oh, God, it just throws me back to being seven.
Yeah, right.
But again, it's I don't care. Fashions. Like, do whatever you want to do.
I've discovered the one I hate.
Yeah, what's that?
Extreme contouring.
Okay, what does that mean?
Okay.
So it's just, I don't know, it's just this list of things, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but it sounds it's like makeup. Something I dislike. It's just a picture of Kim Kardashian doing her makeup.
Yeah, that's about right.
I don't dislike that at all, for the record.
Love it.
I love it so much.
Would you be able to spot them all? Like, I think the only one I'm not sure exactly what it is Harlem Shake.
That's a dance move.
Right. That does sound
same with flossing.
Yeah, flossing I can picture planking.
I had a crack at flossing. Nailed it first time. Some people really struggle to figure it out. I was just standing at work one night, just did it, and I was like, look at that, I'm flossing.
No wonder you work for the Youth Radio Station.
I know, I'm in touch with them.
You are in touch.
I'm in touch.
I just stay in touch.
I should not have said I'm too old for it. because that does sort of sound like I'm too old for my job. So I love all of these trends, and I own 8 fidget spinners, if they're still cool.
Oh, they're still cool.
Are they still cool?
Like, they've always been very cool.
Oh, I've got them.
Yo-yos. Yeah, they in?
Yes.
They always cycle back marbles? Around yo-yos.
You guys got marbles?
Oh, I love them.
Little marble. Knuckleheads?
I'm now on a list of popular fads from the year you were born, 1990. Beverly Hills 90210.
That was a fad, was it?
That was big,
not
yeah.
Not in my heart.
Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na.
Woo! And I'm looking at the year Matt was born. Your what was big your year? Swatches.
Oh, it felt like a long way to swastikas. I'm like, what year have you put in?
Swatches.
Swatches. Swatch watch.
Yeah, they came back around when I was in high school. Lots of people had a swatch watch.
Yeah, I never had a swatch.
No, I wanted a swatch. One of my friends had a swatch watch that was like all sorts of kind of like rainbow colours, but not... Anyway, it was just sick. And it was clear, but then had like colourful stripes on it. I was like, I want a fucking swatch watch.
Can't believe the 1600s had swatch watches. I thought they were much more modern than that.
Do you know what was very cool when I was very young, like probably 5, was Baby G watches. They were these big, thick, you remember those?
Yeah.
Really big, thick, chunky digital watches. And I remember Christmas shopping when I was about 17. I was Christmas shopping with my brother. We're walking through a department store. And I was like, oh, my God, Baby G watches. I wanted one of those when I was 5.
Were they like a spin-off from G-Force or something?
No idea.
Am I making that
They
up?
Came in like pink and blue and anyway.
Baby G for the girls. What were the boys wearing?
Yeah, the boys were wearing man watches. Anyway, my brother got me one for that Christmas as a 17-year-old. He got me a Baby G watch that I'd wanted when I was 5.
They're pretty fun-looking
yeah,
watches.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
There's a website still, babyg.com.au.
There you go. Get yourself a Baby G. Anyway, don't know if that really answers your question. It seems like the trends don't really seem to phase us very much, probably because we're not very cool.
That means we're not. We don't know what it is.
No, God no. And I've never claimed to, not once.
Yeah, there's G-Force watches.
Yeah,
or G-Shock. Sorry,
black and big watch, man. Man time. It'll tell you the man time.
I love how if it's a big black watch, it's like fragile men. They need a tough watch. But if it's a pink watch, it's like patronizing to us women. You know what I mean? It's like, wait, men are the villains both times. And that's the society we live in now.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, men. Are actually second class citizens. Arrest
Bail
my
out of
case,
this one
Your
quick.
Honor.
Get out of it.
Anyway, I just want everyone to come to my MRA meeting. we hold them online every Saturday night. It's normally just me. But...
just waiting for other people to join.
So the other thing we like to do is thank a few of our great supporters who support us on the. Shout out level or above, which I believe is the ass prod level.
Mm.
Jess, you normally come up with a bit of a game based on the topic at hand?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I don't know. I was thinking of like where their mob family is located, but other than where they are from.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Could give them a nickname.
A nickname is much better, yes.
Yeah, that's
fun.
Like a mobby nickname.
Like Fat Tony, we had.
I do just want to say, though, Dave, you really swung in there and took my thing.
Sorry.
But. It is much better. So
I'm torn here.
Yeah,
I don't know what
so
to do.
I guess we'll go for it. I'm not happy about it. And there's going to be a horse head in your bed tonight.
Oh, no.
I would also like to say on the record that...
You want a horse head?
Much respect for what the 5 families have done for New York City and, you know, America in general.
Yeah, I love them. Can I start?
Yeah.
Or did you want to go?
No, I mean, I go first every time,
do
but
you?
I'd love for you to go first this time.
You go.
Take that pressure off my neck.
Well, I also did the intro of this episode, so 6 years in, I'm finally taken over.
6 years in, having that 7-year itch.
Okay, firstly, from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, I mean, that's got to be one of the great names.
It's incredible.
Should have turned left at Albuquerque's. That's a Bugs Bunny-ism, isn't it?
I would love to thank Kayla Marvin.
Oh, Kayla.
The Martian.
The Martian Marvin. From Albuquerque. That just makes sense to me.
The Martian from Albuquerque is pretty good.
Yeah. Kayla the Martian.
Because she's out
Marvin.
Of this world. Is that something?
Yeah, that's great.
I'm hot. and I'm tired and I'm losing my mind a little bit. So
I think that's fantastic.
Okay. Thank you, Kayla the Martian. I would also love to thank from Kensington in Victoria, Holly Griffiths.
Holly Griffiths, the gorilla.
Ooh,
oh, that's good.
That's great.
Holly the gorilla Griffiths.
Yeah, because Holly takes no shit.
Yeah.
If you fuck with her, she's going to fuck you right back.
Oh, gorilla.
She'll beat her chest and beat you
yes!
to a pulp.
And you will not fare well.
Like that.
I don't think that sounds.
No, you haven't seen enough gorillas. I've watched on the podcast Primates. A lot of it is just watching gorillas.
That's nice.
Sound like a perv.
Thank you, Holly. I would also love to thank from Meridian in, I want to say, Idaho.
Oh, Spud Club country.
Is it ID? Idaho? Surely, right?
Yeah. What? There's Indiana, Idaho, Iowa. Are they the three I's?
Meridian ID.
I Dave's reckon it's got to be Idaho.
Please, Jess.
I'd put money on it. Right. If we're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I'd lock that in,
Eddie. Would
you? Well, you just won $1 million.
Yes! Well, from Meridian, Idaho, I would love to thank Travis Berger.
The grave digger.
Love that. Great.
Travis the grave digger Berger.
Love that.
Is that his job? He's like, he just literally digs the graves. I was sure you were going to go with Whopper, but Gravedigger is way more badass. Imagine your nickname being Whopper.
Whopper.
Here comes Whopper.
Whopper's a bumbling fool, but the Gravedigger is like a quiet badass.
Yeah, yeah. He ain't saying nothing. Would it be okay, Dave, if I go next?
I'd love it.
Well, firstly, I'd love to thank from Glasgow in Scotland, Great Britain, Lewis.
Lewis.
Love him, a bit of mysterious. The Glasgow kiss. I mean, that's the Glasgow smoocher.
Yeah.
Just the smoocher.
The smoocher.
Oops, smoochers.
Louis the smooch.
Oh my god!
I think we got it,
Matt. I have to give you one of these. That's fucking great.
That is brilliant.
That's fucking great.
We did it.
Yes.
Comes in, gives you a Glasgow smooch. Good night.
Yeah. No night. You're dead.
This next one is fantastic, and it feels like already really giving themselves a nickname from Berkhamsted in Great Britain. It's Crumbly Biscuit.
Crumbly Biscuit, the Bicky.
The Bicky.
What about the Bicky?
Crumbly, the Bicky Biscuit.
Yeah, funnily enough, named after pens.
Yeah, that's just a coincidence. Oh, you call biscuits Bickies. Oh, okay. Well, that's cute then, isn't it? What a world.
Crumbly Biscuit. That's so good. Thank you very much, Crumbly Biscuit. And finally for me, I'd love to thank from Amsterdam in the Netherlands, Jessica Klaassen.
Ooh, Jessica Klaassen.
Jessica Klaassen. Jessica.
The
teacher.
Yeah,
yes!
The teacher.
That's good.
Jessica, the teacher.
The teach.
There's something about that. Yeah.
The teacher.
Or the prof.
The professor,
Jessica, the professor Klaassen. Yeah, I think professor's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. She'll school you.
Yeah.
In hell.
In hell.
That's so sad.
She goes around, wherever she goes, someone like Slash or someone's following around. So everything she says, there's a little lick on the guitar. I'm just, wow.
That's good.
I would love to thank from Sebastopol here in Victoria, Narelle O'Connor.
The Knockers.
That would have been a nickname. Knock, N-O-C.
What about like Knockers. Sebastopol's like on the fringe of Ballarat? What about something like Gold Digger?
Oh, the gold, yeah.
Or the
Nugget.
The Nugget.
Oh, the Nugget.
Narelle
the Nugget O'Connor.
Narelle the Nugget. That's great.
Don't fuck with the Nug.
Oh my God, the Nugget's here. Fuck. Yeah. Clean up. Clean up the house.
Yeah.
They don't like mess.
The Nugget's going to fuck you up.
Don't call the Nugget.
Narelle O'Connor. Fantastic name.
Great name. Thank you, Narelle.
Thanks, Nugget. And I would love to thank from Auckland over in New Zealand, Evan Lansdowne.
Evan Lansdowne.
The cloud.
Oh, Evan the cloud Lansdowne. Yeah.
You know, because he'll appear above you and piss on you.
Yeah. Rain down fury.
Yeah, that's right. I'll make it rain pain.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, that's good. The cloud.
You guys were going for like metaphorically, like he'll rain pain. I'm saying he's going to piss on people.
And he's going to literally float above.
He literally whips it out and pisses.
He can fly.
At first you'll be like, oh, is it raining? No, you're getting pissed on.
Don't piss on my head and tell me it's raining. That's where the saying comes from. Yeah. It comes from Evan Lansdowne. Slowly it morphed into don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining, but it did start out as on my head.
That's funny.
And finally, I would like to thank from Poughkeepsie in New York. Wonder if he's anywhere near the five crime families. William Iago.
Oh, Iago.
Oh, Iago.
The parrot.
Oh.
William.
Is that the Lion King parrot, Iago?
No. Aladdin.
Aladdin.
Aladdin. Jeez, they've used that parrot enough, haven't they?
Yes.
Different kind of bird, probably.
Different birds.
Sorry. William, the Sorry, parrot. Walt. The parrot Iago.
Oh, that's good. What if it's Jago?
It could be Jago.
Still, the parrot's great. Fantastic. If I may compliment the parrot, my own suggestion.
That's definitely the hero here, parrot.
But it's an ironic nickname because he doesn't squawk.
Yeah, exactly.
I ain't squawking.
I ain't squawking. I ain't saying nothing.
Cheers, William, Evan, Narelle, Jessica, Crumbly, Lewis, Travis, Holly and Kayla. And the last thing we like to do is shout out to a few people who've been on the shout-out level or above for three straight years. They've been welcomed into the Triptych Club. Oh, this is a club that is exclusive to people who have done the thing I just said. And once you're in for life. It's lifetime membership. Jess, normally when people are welcomed in, you've got some sort of a cocktail. Do you have some sort of Five Families cocktail this week?
I do, but it's a secret.
Oh, you won't tell.
I won't tell.
I love that.
I've got five different cocktails, each representing the family. One of them is poisonous.
Oh, shit.
So, there you go.
Well, I know. Yeah, it's sort of like a Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Cocktail service.
Choose wisely.
Dave, you normally book a band as well.
You're never going to believe this.
Oh, my God. What's happened?
Obviously booked this months in advance. I have accidentally booked on this date La Mafia, the five-time Grammy Award-winning musical group playing Latin music based in Houston, Texas.
Wow.
That is vaguely relevant based on the name mainly.
Yeah.
But Houston... That feels to me like a cover.
Yeah.
Am I right, Dave?
That's where they fled.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're playing Latin music in Houston.
Yeah.
We know what you're playing.
Great to have.
You're playing Dean Martin covers in the heart of New York City.
Mm-hmm. We're on to you.
All right. So, Dave, that's a great booking. Well done.
Thank you. I'm getting nothing but hits lately.
You've been nailing it. I mean, you're the only one who's been in a successful band here, so it makes sense. You're using your connections and you're using them wisely.
Thank you.
Now, I'm standing at the door. I've got the clipboard. I've got the list of names. I think we've got about eight coming in tonight. Big night for the club. Dave's he's on the mic inside. He's emceeing this party. Everyone else is already in and standing around ready to cheer you on as we bring you into the club. Takes a lot out of Dave to be the hype man, so Jess is also giving Dave a little hype of his own. Okay, so you're ready?
Dave.
Here we go.
You can do this.
Okay, well, I kind of zoned out for a second there. All right,
no,
here we go.
Good,
here we go.
You're getting in the zone. That's what you're doing.
Yes, I was zoning in.
Yeah, let's do
Not zoning out.
Woo!
All right, from Auckland in New Zealand, it's Meredith Van Beekhuizen.
Oh, Van Beekhuizen.
More like...
Van
seeking a good time.
Houston. Team effort there. Thank you so much. You got my back.
From
you looked like a deer in headlights.
Adelaide in South Australia, it's Christina Nitschke.
You make me feel rich-ky.
Yes, rich in friendship.
From Glasgow in Scotland, it's Niall Dixon.
Ooh, I was in denial about having a good time. But you know what? We're going to have a good time.
Niall's here.
From Leicester in Great Britain, it's Liam Kewen.
Who takes our fantastic photos? We love you, Liam. From Leicester, more like from the Bester place.
Yes.
From Box Hill North in Victoria, Australia, it's Ruby O'Day.
Oh, Ruby O, make my day.
Ruby O, hi.
From Toronto in Ontario, Canada, it's Eva. What's my body doing?
What's my body doing? Having a great time.
Yeah, Eva, welcome aboard.
From Round Rock in Texas in the United States, it's David Aranda.
Ooh.
Get Aranda.
Get Aranda, David Aranda. I was going to say something about Veranda, but anyway, that's way better.
And finally, from York in, this is old York, in Great Britain, it's Liam Duncan.
Ooh, Duncan. on the hoop.
Slam Duncan.
I'd love to have a beer with Duncan.
Duncan, there's so many there for you, mate.
Welcome into the club, Liam, David, Eva, Ruby, Liam, Niall, Christina and Meredith. Hope you have a fantastic time. Thanks so much for your support for the last 3 years. Now, Jess, is there anything else we need to say before we boot this baby home?
Just that if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at dogoonpod@gmail.com. Dogoonpod on all of the socials. We will be back next week with another stellar report. Honestly, it's going to blow your socks off.
Wow.
Oh, shit, it's probably me. It might not blow your socks off, but I'll try. Boot it home, Dave.
Thank you so much for listening. But until next week, I'll say thank you and goodbye.
Later.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.